Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane, joined by John Crumpler, as always, and we're so excited to finally put a bow on the 2022 NFL Draft and how the Houston Texans made out. You can follow me on Twitter at TheRealMarkLane. You can follow John on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. You can follow the Texans Wire at the Texans Wire on Twitter, and make it your homepage, TexansWire.USAToday.com. So, John, it's finally over.
Yeah, Mark. Good morning. I'm excited to finally recap this draft. Something that, God, we spent so much time preparing for and writing about. Nick Caserio finally did it.
Yeah, and I would say that you really did a lot of great work in analyzing the NFL draft, because you went down to Mobile to the Senior Bowl and you got up close with a lot of these prospects and you talked to some of these prospects too. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was funny just throughout the draft how your pet cats were going to historically, kind of a thorn in the side teams to the Texans, like the Ravens and the Colts and the Titans.
We don't talk about that.
It was funny.
We got some Senior Bowl guys, Damian Pierce and Jalen Petrie. They did make it to Houston. I will say, Mark, did you see that 44% of the players drafted this year were Senior Bowl players?
No, but I'm sure Jim Nagy's really loving that.
He is. He's definitely feeling himself. And, you know, credit to him. He put together a good event.
Yeah.
I do think we're going to need a rule moving forward for anyone listening. We do not talk about Roger McCreary on the Titans unless we are playing the Titans. So it's a no from me.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If you look at the text transcripts during draft weekend, that's kind of what it was. Kyle Hamilton goes to the Ravens. Roger McCreary goes to the Titans. You know, like I said, some of your pet cats were going other, but I think really that they got two of your biggest pet cats in Petrie and Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Man, those were wins. When they got those guys, it felt like, yes, they finally addressed the position and got decent value.
I'm so used to when I watch the Texans draft, especially for most of the Bill O'Brien era, just not being happy with who they pick or being entirely unfamiliar with who they pick. I have probably haven't been excited about a Texans draft this excited since they picked Deshaun Watson 12th overall. Like Petrie's name coming up, that was huge. I gotta say, then getting Mechie after that, and they had a great day two, they had a great day three. And we learned a lot about the team, I would say.
Yeah, and what we learned is that Nick Caserio will take those picks, build packages, and go get his guy, and that he really does like to wheel and deal, as we saw in the first round where he moved back from 13 to 15, and I think he was trying to move back again from 15 down into the 20s.
Yeah, they said that, well, I'm glad he didn't, because it sounds like they would not have gotten Kenyon Green, and if they move back to 20 with Pittsburgh, the really good guard options are off the board because Zion Johnson doesn't make it past the Chargers.
Yeah, that exactly, because they really did have their eyes on a guard, and yeah, they probably would have got Kenyon Green. I know we're kind of jumping around here, so yeah, we'll just kind of go in order with who they picked. So what did you think of Derek Stingley?
I like the Stingley pick. I think Stingley really benefited from a draft process that served to tear down essentially every prospect except for Trayvon Walker, who ultimately went number one. It was a weak class at the top with not a lot of separation. Everyone kind of had their things you could pick at. And Nick Caserio ultimately rolled with the most talented player in the draft, someone very highly rated out of high school, someone who dominated his freshman year at LSU, and someone for 3 years at the SEC, although his play dipped off in the last 2 years, just flashed this immense talent, this immense ceiling. And they're really betting on that their coaching staff and their player development can get the best out of that pick. Is there a lot of risk? Yes. Might I have preferred Sauce Gardner? I don't know. It's been a few days. I'm already starting to get partial to Stingley. But I understand the calculated risk that they took in taking Stingley, and I respect it with what this organization is going to have to do to rebuild and compete for the playoffs again. How did you feel about the corner?
I wanted Ahmad Gardner, so I didn't. I gave it a B+. You know, I've warmed up to it since they made the pick, so I give it a B+. I just don't like the injury aspect of it.
The injuries scare me, and I know everyone says, I think the report on him is he's like a pretty, not a quiet guy, but he's kind of like a solo grinder. Like he just kind of puts his head down and work. But to me, I am concerned about why he didn't improve. I mean, just your body's not the same from when you're 18 to when you're 20. Your knowledge of the game, 2 years at the college level with a college weight room and being able to eat that much, it shouldn't be the same. And not that his body isn't different, but I don't understand how his play did not stay level or didn't improve, because that's a lot of time to get better and to feed into your craft. But I trust the Texans' value character as much, if not more, than anyone in the league. And if they're okay to sign off on those concerns, I'm not going to worry about them.
Yeah, they definitely would have done their homework on his character. With Kenyon Green, I really like the pick because it shored up the offensive line, solved the question of what happens to Titus Howard, and now you know Titus Howard's going to play right tackle, and you have a blue chip right there at one of the guard positions.
This pick is probably a B- or a B for me. I kind of have to break it into two parts. So I'll start with the positives. That's what everyone wants to hear. He's going to be a really good guard. This team had a huge hole at the left guard position after Justin Britt and AJ Cann at the right guard and center spots. And we needed to run the ball better. So one, he's an immediate starter. You don't have to worry about that guard position. Two, he created big holes at Texas A&M, and he's going to do that for us. And then three, he created continuity and really just certainty about who's going to start at each position on the offensive line this year. Like you said, Titus Howard is going to start at right guard, which is huge. And then they picked up his fifth-year option. Hallelujah. So that's really good to see that they're quitting on the Howard guard experiment and that, you know, they're true to their word. They want to run the ball better. My concerns about this pick are the opportunity cost of this pick. They didn't get a ton back to move from 13 to 15 from Philadelphia. They got three picks. I believe the highest one was 124. And they missed out on my two last really elite players in the board. Kyle Hamilton went to Baltimore at 14, and Jordan Davis went to the Eagles at 13. And I can't say I wouldn't feel better about this class if he walked away with Stingley and Davis or Stingley and Hamilton than I do about Kenyon Green. There was a lot of guard depth, and I mean, we kind of saw that at the end of first round with the Patriots, the Cowboys, people kind of reaching for these high second round values to go in the first. And if those guys don't pan out, this will look pretty silly because I do think Kenyon Green has a high floor. But I was a little disappointed that they chose to take themselves out of the equation for those really high caliber players that I was surprised to see at 13.
Yeah, I figured when they were there at 13, I thought, it's Kyle Hamilton. Then they backed out of it, and I thought that, you know, Caserio was trying to get, you know, a little cute or something. But no, I mean, they just backed out of them completely. I liked it. I gave it an A.
I will say, listening to Caserio afterwards, it sounds very clear that Kenyon Green was the pick. Like, that is who they were going to take with their second first-round pick, the number one guy on their board. And I feel like they probably would have just taken him at 13 if they didn't move back. So at least I can feel better about the value process of taking him there. So B, yeah. From me. I understand the A. He's a good player. He fits a need, a desperate need at that. But, God, they passed up some guys who I think have a much higher ceiling.
They did. But they didn't pass up one with a high ceiling at number 37 overall in round 2 and taking Jalen Petrie. I give that an A+.
Yeah, I'll give Petrie an A. I'm gonna go A. I love the player. I have my concerns about Petrie, but none of my concerns about Petrie are about the guy himself. He works hard. The film is fabulous at Baylor. He's gonna bring a lot to the run game. He had, I think, 19 and a half tackles for loss while he was at Baylor. And really, we could even put him at weak side linebacker on some passing sets. If you want a guy who can play really well against the pass and the run. And then he'll play at strong safety, I would imagine, for the most part. And he's more than athletic enough to develop into that. But when we talk about Petrie, aside from the excitement of retaining a local Texas guy and the fact that we needed help at defensive back and he was an All-American defensive back, he does require a bit of projection as much as anyone in this draft class, and that he was kind of used in this really unique, the star position, like a combination of weak side linebacker and nickel corner at Baylor. And he's being projected as a safety. So I will be very interested to see what Lovie Smith has planned to go get Petrie. And I wonder if that was their original plan at all. I think their love for Breece Hall was pretty evident to the point where the Jets felt they had to jump the Texans and took him one pick earlier. But I'm really glad they pivoted to Petrie. I think it's a much better use of the pick than taking a running back. I'm just so, so interested to see if they want to, do they want to play him as a too high safety? Do they want to play him as a linebacker, nickel corner hybrid? Are they going to do everything with him? I think that the ceiling floor combo here is as low and as high of a variety of outcomes as any player that they pick.
Doesn't Eric Murray, or didn't he play the star position?
Dude, Eric Murray's versatile. He plays every position. Did you not listen to Bill O'Brien?
Okay. Yeah. So
I'm just kidding. I don't really know. Okay. I mean, I don't know what to say about Eric Murray with this conversation.
Ah, okay. Well, then we'll move on to John Metchie. I thought it was a bold move to move up and take John Metchie and at number 44 overall in round two, because now you add another high value receiver, just someone to add to Davis Mills, weapons.
Yeah, I'll go B+ with this pick. And I'm going to break this one of the pros and cons of Kenyon, like I did Kenyon Green, because I have questions. The first thing is that you're getting a blue blood Alabama receiver, and he's going to be a good player in what's one of the weakest position groups on our team. He also slots in really nicely between Brandon Cooks is going to play one of the boundary receiver positions. Nico Collins was drafted to play boundary receiver and to go win one-on-one matchups. He's your big frame guy. And then Metchie is going to come into the slot on third downs. And I think he could play some perimeter too on first and second downs when you don't want three receivers. That's just me kind of projecting. I think Pep Hamilton's going to run a lot of two tight end, which we'll talk about later with our day three picks. But Metchie's going to be a very good route runner and hopefully a productive player in the slot. I am concerned about his injury history, and he's also a really small player. I did not realize how small he was until I started doing my post-draft homework, but he would kind of have to be a historical outlier to succeed, and not that he can't. I think he can win with his route running and with some of the just the toughness and putting himself in the right position that we saw at Alabama. But he's small and he has an injury history. So what's he going to do with that? And clearly they love the person and the worker that he is, listening to Caseria. So it's one of those things that I'm just not going to worry about if they're not going to worry about it.
Yeah, he's 6 foot, 190. By comparison, Brandon Cooks, 5'10", 183. I gave it a B for Metchie.
Yeah, I would agree. Metchie's a B. And they also passed on some guys, I would say, like George Pickens. And I don't know if we had the right environment to support a Pickens. I think they also passed on Sky Moore. But I liked Metchie a lot. I mean, you and I had to research him. We talked to his doctor who did the ACL surgery. I think it's a really good pick. I'm excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think it's a good pick too. Another Alabama guy in the third round, they get Christian Harris at linebacker. I liked it. It added a young guy at linebacker along with Garrett Wallow. I gave it a B+.
I think I would say the same grade. They needed another young linebacker. That's probably the oldest position group on the team. I will say it was the only pick of the draft that didn't feel like they addressed a need. It felt like they took someone who was ranked highly on their board at a really good value spot. I loved where they drafted Christian Harris. And I think a lot like Stingley, this is a bet on the team's culture and the team's coaching staff that they can develop him into the best player that he can be. In a perfect world, he could play middle linebacker in a year. And in the meantime, though, they have time to just onboard him to one of the weak side linebacker or strong side linebacker positions. He's pretty raw. He had an amazing first season at Alabama. But I'm excited to see what happens when he gets around a group of older guys. We have a lot of veteran linebackers who played for a long time. I think Lovie Smith is going to put him in positions to succeed. I really felt like that was a guy who, dang, that's great value in the third round.
Yeah, it did feel like a good value pick. And on the start day three, round four, Damian Pierce out of Florida, running back, I gave it an A because they finally took a young guy at running back.
Yeah, I'll give it an A+. I'll give it 100. They needed a running back. They waited until the perfect time to do it. And the guy that they took, I didn't think they could go wrong with Isaiah Spiller or Damian Pierce. And I love Pierce. Pierce is probably a little underutilized at the University of Florida. But at the Senior Bowl and the post-draft process, his stock has just shot up. He really has a three-down skill set in terms of how he cuts, how hard he runs. He has enough speed. I think he can catch passes out of the backfield. At the Senior Bowl, we saw a player who can pass protect well. He's probably the most talented running back we have immediately, Mark. And they got him at 108. How can we complain?
That's what I'm saying. It was the timing, and it's the player. Mm-hmm. He had 5.7 yards per carry at Florida, and he was underutilized. So he's still, if he were a battery, you know, he's got about 90% left, yeah. You know, and that's exciting.
Mark, did you see that that highlight play at Florida where his helmet comes off and he still runs for like through two more Florida State players into the end zone?
No, and that's my fault because I need to put up on Texans Wire a list of everybody's college highlights.
You should watch some Damian Pierce. It'll get you fired up. I would be lying if I said I didn't get a little fired up with the idea of now that we've got AJ Cann and Kenyon Green on that line, him running between the offensive linemen. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. For the first time since Dante Foreman in 2017, they have a young guy at running back. They're not doing it with some old guys that they signed or picked up because some other old guy that they had tore his ACL in the third preseason game. Thomas Booker out of Stanford, round five, defensive lineman. I gave it a B-. I felt like they could have addressed defensive linemen a little earlier in the draft.
Yeah, I will probably give it just a B. At the fifth round, I don't really care who you take, so it's just a trusting of the team's process. And really, all these guys, you're hoping they turn into rotational players. I'm not expecting to find a starter per se. You know, I don't know if Roy Lopez, who was a sixth-round pick last year, would generally be a starter on a great team. He is for our team, but he's definitely a rotational piece on any team, and that's what you're looking for. His athletic measurements, Mark, are fantastic. I looked at his RAS. I think it's like 9.8 or a 10, his relative athletic score. I think he has the potential to develop into more. People who talk about him talk about a really high IQ player. I don't think he's going to play any edge. He sounds like an interior defensive lineman to me. He'll play that three technique tackle that Malik Collins plays. So I have no problem getting another backup and seeing if it can become something more.
When they took him, they on the channels, they had defensive end, and then it was defensive tackle, and then I just said defensive lineman, which is what the Texans officially classify everybody as anyway, even though you've got clearly defensive end in Jonathan Grenard. Oh, he's a defensive lineman. Same as Malik Collins, who's playing defensive tackle. So you're saying they got another three technique. Do you think he kind of replaces Charles Omenihu because he was kind of playing inside and out?
Yeah, I think he could take that role. That's a good comparison in terms of usage. I think the nice thing about Booker is that you can put him anywhere. I think one of the big positives about him as a prospect is he is versatile. So if we want him to play three technique in Malik Collins' spot, we can. If you want him to rush on either side, I think he could do that too. So really it was plugging in. You need a depth at both spots, and I think he could do both spots. A lot like Omenihu.
Moving on, I gave it a B-. Moving on, we've got Teagan Quatoriano out of Oregon State, tight end in the fifth round. I gave it a C+.
Yeah, it's probably about where I would be. I didn't even know who he was, and I did a lot of work on this class. So, Teagan, it looks like he's a really good run-blocking tight end. It's just not someone that I know a lot about. It looks like there might have been better tight ends on the board, but they really needed a blocking tight end, and it looks like that is his bread and butter and what he's going to do for this team and really let Brevin Jordan will be that receiving tight end. So, like I said, it's the sixth round. I'm not going to complain. I'll go with your C-plus grade because it isn't really exciting in any capacity.
Yeah, it is just kind of like, you know, your token blocking tight end. And then Austin Deculus out of LSU, the tackle. I'm interested to see what this develops into, and I gave it a B+. And look at that, by the way. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players out of the SEC West.
Yeah, that feels pretty crazy. And I also read today that there's no players outside of the Power 5 through Caseria's two drafts. So he definitely likes his blue blood players, especially in the SEC. I love this last pick. I think he was a four-year starter at LSU. He played a lot of tackle. His size more so projects as a guard. And if we're being honest with ourselves, Justin Britt and AJ Cann are not long-term answers on the interior. So I really like taking a swing on a guy who's played a lot of football, has a lot of experience, clearly has the physical profile to hold up in the SEC at tackle, which means I think he could do okay at guard. I'm excited to see him develop, and I imagine he could really get some playing time. If AJ Cann last year, he had a big injury in Jacksonville. Obviously not wishing that upon anyone, but if Cann goes down with anything nagging and has to miss a game or two, like that does happen to veteran players, he's someone I would want to see step in there.
Yes, he does seem like a guy that if he can just develop behind the scenes and get in an NFL strength and conditioning program, and then you're looking forward to him to taking on a starting job in his third year, he could probably do it. So I give the draft class a B+.
B+ is probably my grade too. There are some process oriented questions that I have about. Mostly, I'm just upset about the Kyle Hamilton, Jordan Davis thing. But other than that, I generally loved who they took and how they went about it. The only question marks for me would be the Christian Harris pick and the Kenyon Green pick. But I think Stingley was a home run. I think Damian Pierce is a home run. I think Jalen Petrie is a home run. And Mechie is really solid what they needed. So, yeah, B+.
Yeah, B+. And, you know, that's what I've seen everybody else say. And so there you go. We're in lockstep with what all the pundits say. So we are smart. All right, moving on.
We're definitely
smart. Yeah. No question. Now looking ahead to 2023, because I think this sets the table to really put the finishing touches on getting the Texans back to being division winners and everything. What needs to happen in the 2023 offseason, pending that everybody's healthy and Davis Mills does well and everything, now what needs to happen in 23?
I mean, the idea of thinking about 2023 is you and I both agree this was a foundational draft. And everyone feels that way. It's exciting. They addressed a lot of holes. But if you look at the Texans, and if you are honest with yourself, they're not even a top 10 team in the AFC. They have a long, long way to go to competing for a Super Bowl and at least another year for competing for the playoffs. So in 2023, what they'll need to do is they're going to need another draft like this one, and they need to keep finding playmakers. They have right now, we're looking at a lot of starters who are okay. Like, you look at them, you say, oh, that's an NFL guy, like a Christian Kirksey. They need to find more guys with the potential to be elite playmakers. And another part of that's going to be spending big in the 2023 offseason. I read, I don't remember where, it's not going to be $100 million. It's going to be less than that when it's all said and done after the extensions they've handed out, picking up the fifth-year option on Titus, et cetera. But they need to go find quality free agents to, again, bring in those elite-level playmakers. And I don't know if the holes are as glaring now, but there's going to be needs that reveal themselves during the offseason. And finally, you said it's an assumption that Davis Mills plays well. I'm not willing to go there yet. I think a lot has to happen between a quarterback's first and second year, and a lot can go wrong in the second year if the infrastructure isn't there. Right now, the conversation around Davis Mills actually reminds me of the Drew Lock dialogue in Denver after his incredible six-game stretch that included a thrashing of the Houston Texans in 2018.
FU MF-er. That's yes. When that happened, by the way. That's what
it was?
Bill O'Brien went off. Like that, it was at halftime of that game.
I did not know it was that game. That's awesome. That kind of makes the Drew Lock ascension even funnier. But anything and everything could go wrong, technically, with Davis Mills. So if he's set, then you should be looking to draft a premier offensive lineman, edge, or receiver in the top 10 again next year. And if he's not, if David Mills doesn't work out based on their signing of Kevin Hogan yesterday, they don't want to have another quarterback on the roster who is a legitimate NFL quarterback. So they'll probably be picking CJ Stroud or Bryce Young number one. So address the quarterback, add more talent through the draft, and address big needs in free agency. That'd be my 3-point checklist for 2023.
Yeah, I think it really depends on how Davis Mills performs in this upcoming season, because if he stinks, then quarterback becomes a need. If he does well and you're comfortable and he Kirk Cousins you, then you're not really looking at quarterback so much, and then you can address other areas. And yeah, I think that they need to get a premier edge rusher in free agency, and then if they can just continue to shore up the offensive line, and then use the draft to get, I would say, I think they're pretty fine at receiver right now, but just use the draft to continue to address the best player available.
And I don't know about that, Mark. You think they're fine at receiver?
Not to take a round one guy.
Do you think they have a top 20 receiver group in the NFL?
Yes. But at number 19.
Okay, that's interesting. I would need to look at it a little harder, but off the top of my head,
I think Cooks makes it that.
I mean, Cooks is like somewhere between the 15th to the 25th best receiver in the National Football League. And then there's not a guy afterwards I can confidently say is a top 60 NFL receiver, which makes me think if I like went team by team, it is not. I think it's a bottom 10 unit. I would want another receiver next year. Unless Nico Collins or John Mechie is like a stud.
That's the thing. I'm being overly optimistic. But it really hinges upon how Davis Mills plays, because then you're really looking at quarterbacks at that point. And I think the scouts are still going to be looking at quarterbacks no matter how well Davis Mills plays. Just, you know, because you want to get this right. This is kind of like the final fitting crown jewel of, okay, it is really the big Infinity Stone, okay, on the gauntlet with his quarterback for Casario's rebuild.
I mean, that if that doesn't work, nothing else is going to work. But I don't see how that isn't addressed with a permanent solution in the next 12 months, which is good.
Yes. All right. Moving on. What story? Coming back to 2022, what stories do you want to hear out of rookie minicamp and OTAs and mandatory minicamp? What stories do you want to hear out of NRG Stadium during this basketball on grass period?
I've got four storylines, and I'll give them to you in order. Number one, I want to hear how the running back group is being used. Are they going to be a true committee where Rex Burkhead, Marlon Mack, and Damian Pierce are evenly splitting reps? If they are a committee, who's going to be the receiving back? Who's the favorite for first and second down? Or does this turn into a situation where Damian Pierce or even a Marlon Mack are able to carve out a role where they're seeing over 50% of the snaps in the backfield? I think that'll be very interested with how much this team says they want to run the ball. My second story, how is Lovie Smith going to use, and I talked about this early, how is he going to use Jalen Petrie? Is Petrie lining up primarily a deep safety in that, like, that second strong safety spot on defense? Or is he at the line of scrimmage a lot with the linebackers? That'll give me a big idea of what to expect from his role and his production rookie year. Number three, how is Stingley doing in camp? Obviously, a lot of the cards are on him to be that stud. And it would be pretty encouraging if, you know, if it was like Brandon Cooks can't get open against Stingley. You know what I mean? If he was just that lockdown guy in practice. And then number four, how does John Mechie look off the ACL tear?
Mine, I've got chemistry. Basically, I want to hear that the chemistry with Davis Mills and the receiving core is improving or is on target or it will be dependable. I want to hear about Garrett Wallow getting more reps. What?
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Oh, Garrett Wallow?
Yeah, I don't even, this is going to sound terrible. I just kind of consider Wallow a non-factor. Like, he's a sixth round pick.
Oh, no, he's a fifth round pick.
I mean, that's just interesting. I wonder if he does get that time.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I want to hear some sort of growth from Garrett Wallow. Just because Roy Lopez, a sixth round pick, he had a stellar rookie year, and he figures to be a factor at defensive tackle. So I'd like to see some growth out of Garrett Wallow, who I feel like is the most underdeveloped or of the 2021 class, you know? I'd like to see him, because you can't just keep relying on old guys and veteran free agents. So that's why I said Garrett Wallow. I mean, at some point your draft classes are going to have to perform. And then I want to hear about Damian Pierce getting touches. And then, like I said, playing Royce Freeman just off the roster. I want to hear about a Damian Pierce just getting all the touches and just starting to climb his way up the depth chart. And then finally, Derek Stingley. I want to hear, I mean, you touched on it. You added in Mechie. But for me, it's Stingley that I really want to hear about. Is how he's doing, how he's feeling, and that if he can not miss any time in camp, if he can take every snap, if he can have 100% attendance for every rep, I think that will give a lot of confidence to Texans fans about the pick.
Yeah. Like I said, Mark, how would you feel if you saw a headline like in OTAs that was like Brandon Cooks, like it's impossible to get open against this guy?
It would sound good. I would hope that it would be because it's hard for Cooks to get open and, you know, not because of lack of chemistry on the part of Mills and the receiving core.
Fair enough. Very fair.
But yeah, unfortunately, during this portion, you can't really see what goes on with the trenches just yet. So you kind of have to wait till training camp. So, and then that leaves you to say, for me to say stuff like, I want to see Garrett Wallow.
I mean, yeah, we could talk about, we just won't hear things about the offensive line or really know anything about them. We'll know who's starting, but in terms of if it works, if the scheme works, if they have chemistry running it together and blocking together, you're right. We'll have to wait until the first preseason game.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last item on this episode of the Texans Talk podcast, it's an intriguing one. What do the Kansas City Chiefs see in Houston Texans defensive backs? Because one thing to sign Tyrann Mathieu, because he was something before he came to the Texans. Then they signed Justin Reed. Now they trade for Lonnie Johnson. What do the Chiefs see in Texans DBs?
I think they see an organization that has poor infrastructure the past few years to support talent. And they think that they can get more out of our guys than we got out of them. I think there's a chance that they're right. When you look at, we'll just start with Justin Reed. He was put in a lot of bad positions, and I think his play decreased over the years. I would not have paid what they paid to bring him in. But I think they say in our system, we can get rookie year Justin Reed every year. And then especially if Lonnie Johnson is where my feelings come into it, that they look at someone. Mark, we screwed Lonnie Johnson. Like, we might have ruined his NFL career. He was a second round pick or third round pick?
He was a second round pick. Him and Max Sharping in 2019. Yes. Those are your second round picks.
He was a top 60 overall selection, and he played corner. He's a cornerback. He shadows receivers, plays these small zones, and he makes plays against receivers in the runs. And we yanked him around. We went corner to safety. And he never got to develop. And in the meantime, coaches got fired left and right. The systems kept changing. It's just a terrible situation for a young player. So for a 2024 conditional seventh round pick, I think Kansas City says, hey, we're hearing about you from Justin Reed, who has a vote of confidence. You're asking out and betting on yourself. It costs us nothing to bring you into camp. That he does fit a long physical profile that teams in this league want. And for the first time ever, he's going to be asked to play corner in consecutive seasons. I think they're betting on their own infrastructure to actually give a guy like that a chance to develop and to just do what he does best, which, frankly, the Texans never asked Lonnie Johnson to do what he does best. And if they did, it wasn't for an extended period of time. So no. I think what we're seeing is a high-class organization and football operation betting against the failures of the Texans' old regime. Would you agree with me on that one?
Yeah, I do. Because, let's see, Romeo Crennel used him as a cornerback. That was supposed to be it. And then when Anthony Weaver took over, throughout the course of that season, he shifted to a safety. And then in Lovie Smith's, he was going to be a safety. And then he shifted back to cornerback by near the end of the season. And they just jacked with him, man. And they didn't let him just be at one place, which if he were going to be at one place, it would be cornerback. And he's exactly what Lovie Smith talks about in terms of physicality, just the vital statistics of what he wants in a cornerback, which, by the way, that's what Brett Veach said when he was asked in a press conference about the acquisition of Lonnie Johnson. That's what he mentioned, was that they were going to play him at corner because he has that prototypical build that teams are looking for in cornerbacks these days.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of teams who would have taken a shot on him. I mean, Mark, do you watch The Office, or have you ever watched it?
I have taken in enough memes and clips that I have a very good frame of reference.
Okay, well, there's this episode where Michael is in this like semi-abusive relationship, and he hosts a house party, and he talks, it's so inappropriate, but he's like, vasectomy, unvasectomy, snip, snap, snip, snap. He says he's had three of them and then three of them undone. And that's like how I feel about Lonnie Johnson. We just kept asking him to do different things. And there were a lot of teams I have to imagine that would have taken a swing on him. It's like, yeah, like Veach said, like, hell, even like Lovie Smith said, they want corners that look like Lonnie. But I'm glad he got to go. It was a little loud for his talent production. I honestly felt bad how the fans chirp him because he hasn't played well, but he hasn't exactly been placed in a position to play good.
Yeah, and he's actually a really good guy too, mm-hmm. which is why it was embarrassing, frankly, that the fans did chirp him like that, because his rookie year, then his first 5 weeks of the season, he's paying for the funeral of a kid that drowned in his hometown of Gary, Indiana. But, you know, people forget that kind of stuff 2 years in, because all they want to hear about is how well you do on the football field, which he wasn't doing well on the football field, largely due to coaching and schematics. But, again, there's the thing, John. You did all this prep work on the 2022 draft. You can take these notes and bury them, and then when these guys become available for free agency, you can go back and look at these notes and then compare it to how they've been as a player. And I think that's what the Chiefs did. He was a top 100 pick in the 2019 draft. So all they had to do was just dust off their notes, because they had done so much homework on him, and just see how it compares. And yeah, they said, this guy's been jacked with. We're just going to keep him. We're not going to snip unsnip. We're just going to keep him on one or the other and then roll with it.
Yeah. I guess I will be able to do that. I've finally done enough work on all these guys. And dang, no, I can't think about these guys coming off their rookie contracts, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. It's so far into the future that, you know, we don't need to worry about it. Okay. I think that this has been a very productive episode of the Texans Talk podcast. So, what would you like to work on this week, and where can people follow you on Twitter?
This week I'll probably do some more opinion pieces. I don't want to do draft grades. Everyone's seen Texans draft grade. I wrote on Baker Mayfield last night. We don't have time to talk about that though. Follow me at John H. Crumpler on Twitter. I write on the Texans Wire with Mark, obviously. And we'll see, Mark. I'm going to scheme up something good. What are you going to write this week?
I'm just going to chase the news, kind of like a kid in an Easter egg hunt that follows the other kids. But, I want to really have a nice little listicle of the college highlights of the Texans draft picks. And, hey, we don't have to talk the draft next week. Maybe we can talk about the undrafted free agents, which we didn't get to.
That could be good. I'd have to actually go learn about those guys. So I'll put that on my to-do list.
All right. Sounds great, John.
All right, Mark, have a great morning. Successful episode.